We'll start testimony, even though we don't have a quorum, and we're going to let Representative Bunn go first because she has to get somewhere else, from what I understand.
Mr. Chair,
I don't think we can do anything yet, but when we do have a quorum, we will move the bill and then the delete also. Representative Bunn, you want to welcome to the committee, and do you just want to then take work off the delete all amendment, the E1 amendment that's in the packet? Go ahead, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for having us today. Members, this bill...
Well, maybe the D1 E1 is coming around. I have it, members.
It's the H2839DE1. Members and Chair, this bill is part of a package of bills that had been agreed to by the Small Business Caucus, a bipartisan effort here in the House that met over the interim all fall every 2 weeks. We came to agreement around 8 proposals at the end of that time period, and this is one of those flagship proposals. Members, this is a modest bill, but one that's very important to move us forward. During the process of our work, we explored the issue of portals for small business expansion development information available throughout the United States and in our own state, looking at what were kind of the state of the art for these type of resource access systems. We learned that Minnesota already had some very good efforts that were already in place. We have an excellent publication that's a guide to starting a small business that in both hard copy and CD form. We have the Positively Minnesota website at positivelyminnesota.com that has a very significant business section. We have an excellent licensing directory, and we have a wonderful public partner partnership between Deed and the Chamber of Commerce that had been privately funded that has set up an initial business connection portal for directing people to state and other resources. What we have before you is, in our process of learning about these systems and what's available in our state and elsewhere, we did learn that Minnesota is behind the curve in this area. Other states, including some of those on our border, have more sophisticated portals, more comprehensive, and are better at accessing information, both resources, but also they have available online licensing and permitting directly online, which is not currently available in our state. While going to the full scale that's available in some other states, particularly with the online permitting licensing, is currently fiscally beyond our capabilities because it requires significant investment of resources. We did identify the ability to build on the existing work in the private-public partnership with the Chamber to expand our state system more effectively to create a more sophisticated portal to have available for small businesses and those emerging businesses to access. And that's what you have before us here today. This bill in the DE1 amendment has no fiscal note. It's basically just directing the commissioner of Deed to direct the Office of Entrepreneurship and Business Development to develop and maintain a virtual network with seamless access to people in our state, and to seek this private funding to continue to build on the public partnership private-public partnership model going forward. And so we want to make sure they have the authority to do this, and moreover that they've been directed to do this with this piece of legislation. We also have incorporated some specific timelines and some reporting back to us, so they will update as to the effectiveness of that outreach and initiative and how far they've gotten with this project. I have with me here one testifier, Mike Myrie from Deed, and Spike came specifically to address the issue of what this is adding beyond what we currently have with the partnership in place.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Myrie. I am the State Director for the Office of Entrepreneurship and Small Business Development within the Department of Employment and Economic Development. What this bill does is helps us enhance the public-private partnership that we already have with the Minnesota Chamber and its Business Connection website. Specifically, what it does is allows us to build upon or build a system that categorizes resource organizations that are available to entrepreneurs and to existing small businesses, showing them or demonstrating to them or creating awareness about the programs that exist. This bill, again, is an idea through the Small Business Caucus, in which Deed supports and the Minnesota Chamber is on board with.
And we are open for questions, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay. Excuse Mr. Myrie, is it?
It is.
How do you spell your name?
M-Y-H-R-E.
Okay. Mr. Myrie, so there's no cost. I mean, you're just going to absorb this at the department.
We're not going to absorb it. Actually, the Minnesota Chamber, along with DEED, is going to leverage its relationships with the various foundations to seek seed funding for this in hopes that then we can prove it to be successful and then have it funded on an ongoing basis through the Minnesota Chamber. That's the possibility that we're creating right now.
That's what you hope to do.
That's what we hope to do. That's what we're confident in being able to do.
And the legwork that you or someone from your department will be doing is gratis.
It is, yes.
And if you didn't want this bill, what would the fiscal note be on it?
The estimated cost...
You don't have to answer that, because I just know how things work. Representative Mahoney then moves the that House File 2839 be recommended to pass and re-refer to finance. It came from finance. We have to send you back there, even though you've taken out. And then Representative Mahoney moves the DE1 amendment. Members, any other questions? Representative, someone have one? Okay, I guess with that then, and maybe it, I don't see anybody here from the Office of Public Education, or I guess they're not here, but it would be a good model that we have the Office of Higher Education go to the Chamber of Commerce and the foundations and get the $43 million that were in the hole, maybe only $20 million now for the state grant program, but that's a good model to follow. So with that, no further questions, and all those in favor, well, first of all, we have to vote on the DE amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign, motion prevails. Okay, and then Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 2839 be recommended to pass as amended and re-refer to finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you,
Representative Bunn and Chair Mr.
Myrie.
Thank
you. We would pronounce that Myrie on the ring. It's a Finnish name. Okay, Representative Mason, welcome to the committee, Representative Mason. So nice to see you. And Representative Obermueller moves that House File 3216 be recommended to pass. And I think this can go right to the floor. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for hearing House File 3216. And as a member of the House Jobs Task Force and the Small Business Caucus, I've had the opportunity to hear a lot of testimony about the need to help our small businesses, and that is what essentially this bill is doing. It's just a way to have better, the legislature, to have better accountability so that we can ensure that our small businesses are competitive.
And would Deed wish to comment on it? Again, you're obviously supporting the bill because there's no fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Loftus. I'm with Deed. We do support the bill, in especially as it helps us focus on continuous improvement of our work with businesses. The report that it requires initially will call for us to explain very clearly to you how we work with companies, and then the second part moving forward is how we can do a more effective job accomplishing that, along with recommendations of things that we are not doing now, with the things that we may not have resources for now, to make those things happen. So we do appreciate the work of the caucus in bringing these forward, and are happy to be able to work on this, putting this fast action team together.
Okay, so you have no problem with the bill then, indeed, and you can absorb any kind of cost there is.
Yes, we will.
Okay. Any questions from members?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've heard this bill before in the biosciences, and I again raised the issue, I guess, about the 24 hours. I think that it makes sense to try to connect with people who are anticipating or considering leaving the state. And I think that it's, you know, you want to have as much involvement as possible to try to convince them about the benefits of remaining here. But I am concerned about the ability for a response team to be able to respond within 24 hours, and I just I was expecting maybe an amendment on that, so I'd like to hear a response on that. Thank you.
Mason.
And I did talk with the senator, and their bill went through with this as well. But if you have a specific suggestion, I'm open to that, and maybe you would like to address that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppe, I've thought about that, too, and I realized that what it's calling for is response within 24 hours, which, we, you know, a business calls us and says, I need help, or we identify something that's at risk of leaving the state for an opportunity. We should react within 24 hours. I mean, you should return a phone call in 24 hours. The concern I had was a full-blown plan of partnerships and collaboration. It's pretty tough to do in 24 hours, but responding to an opportunity that's identified in 24 hours is a reasonable request. So I've reflected on that, Representative Poppe, and from the discussion we had last time in Representative Mahoney's committee, and realized that's not an unreasonable request.
Mr. Chair, I can appreciate that, and I guess you'll probably be held to that standard now, and that will face the consequences of that. But and I would agree that, you know, returning a phone call is probably certainly could be done within a day's time. But the idea of actually, if somebody a business contacts you and they have a greater need, and to follow through on some of those things, I really just don't want to have this put out there as being something that's not doable, not workable, and so I just raise again the caution and concern about that.
Thank you. Well taken. Thank you.
Just out of curiosity, since there's a few of us members, Representative Anderson and Reiner, I think the only two I can see that sit on taxes, of course, and we were talking about the Carzy, or not the dictator, but the governor's proposal. Slocum got it anyway. So what did Deed do when 4 years ago Ford Motor Company said we're closing? How fast did it take you or somebody to make a call? Was it the next day you called and said, do you remember that? How does it work since we're proposing to do a number of other things to keep Ford Motor Company here? So give us an idea of a big player like that announces one day that we're closing a manufacturing plant that employs over 1,000 people that get really paid well. How did you respond to that?
Mr. Chairman, I can't remember the specifics of the response, but I know the commissioner was on the phone with people from the UAW and the local Ford people. Whether that was within 24 hours or not, I can't recall. That also led to a series of discussions and conversations with Detroit, and ultimately with the governor flying to Detroit along with the chief of staff and I think our commissioner then. So, you know, pretty visible, high-profile project. I think they acted with as much haste as they could have given that announcement. That's the kind of a project that, you know, when it happens, all of a sudden it hits. We've got to do something quickly. But it's also, maybe to Representative Poppe's question, it's, you know, a project like that or an announcement like that is often months or years in the making. You know, sometimes there aren't things that we know about. And if it comes up and within 24 hours, it's not likely that one day's action can turn things around. So that's a long-term response to the Ford site. And as you heard the discussion last night, it's probably going to be on the radar for a few more years as they make their announcement to close and the specific date of that and how we can respond to that. So I wish I could give you a better answer as to the specific sequence back then 4 or 5 years ago, but that's my best memory.
Any other questions? If not, then Representative Obermueller renews his motion that House File 3216 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye opposed. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And next we have Representative Newton with House File 3570.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
General Allness is here too. I made him a general. I like him so much. You'd be a general under my administration, let me tell you that.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes. Go ahead, yes. Do whatever you want.
That could be a curse too, you know.
Yeah. And Representative Haas moves that House File 3216 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in our policy on this. I gotta get rid of this one. Sorry, folks. Representative Hosmer's 3570 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion, or just held over for possible inclusion. Representative Newton, thank you. Welcome to the committee. We haven't seen you here.
This is my first time, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Did you bring cash? Everybody else wants cookies.
Yeah.
Our committee wants cash. Welcome. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House File 3570 defines and adds veteran-owned small businesses to the category of businesses eligible for interest-free loans of up to $20,000. And as you know, under the current law, the Commissioner of Deed can make these loans available for economic injury to a business for the loss of essential employees due to active military service. We are asking in this bill that the loans be extended to recently separated vets who have served on active duty since 9/11. And with me, I have Colonel Eric Alness from the National Guard, Mr. John Baker, who had the idea for this. He's a member of our House Military Advisory Group. Jeffrey Nelson from Deed, and I think that's it. And we also have a testifier, Sergeant First Class Dan Jordan, who I believe just finished his third tour in Iraq and recently retired and would be one of the individuals eligible for a loan under this program.
Okay. With that, who wants, why don't we have, I mean, it's a good idea, and why don't we have our veteran that just recently returned testify to the, and who are, oh, okay, that would maybe be the best, and tell us, I mean, has anybody been, sought something like this from Deed and been refused because there wasn't language to do it?
Mr. Chair, Jeff Nelson, I'm with the Office of Business Finance at Deed. I administer this program. This program was originally appropriated $400,000. Mm-hmm. Through at this point in time, we have given out 6 loans. Each person has asked for the maximum, which is $20,000, meaning that $120,000 has been loaned out of this revolving loan fund, leaving $280,000. I currently have about 3 or 4 inquiries from other small businesses who have employed reservists who are interested in loans from this fund. I've also had a number of phone calls, probably 3 or 4 since the inception of the program, from reservists who have asked if they would qualify, if startup business would qualify under this program. As it's currently laid out, they do not.
Somebody want to get that? And so you thought you needed this language to help in that situation?
I did not ask for this language. This was brought forth by the others here. I merely want to point out that the program currently has capacity to expand to include startup businesses.
Okay. Why don't we hear from
Sergeant Jordan?
Hold on. Welcome, and just say your name for that.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Dan Jordan. I'm recently retired, 26 years with the National Guard. As I stated, I served 2 tours in Iraq. The recent one, I just come back at the end of May of last year. And in talkings with Mr. Baker, was made aware of this and have made recent trips out to the Minneapolis PX, where they do have a little kitchen counter out there that is currently closed, and I'm looking at that. And with this bill being passed as it's written, would help in that with redoing and remodeling some of the items that need to be up to code at that place out of the PX.
Okay. And, sir, again, your name, and you might want to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Baker. I'm a retired United States Marine. I spent 22 years in the Marine Corps, retired as a gunnery sergeant. I went to law school after I retired, and now I have a full-service law firm for veterans. I'm also the chair of the Veteran Advocacy Institute. And what we're working on is helping our returning veterans get jobs. That's one of the biggest issues that we've got. You know, we've got our next greatest generation of veterans coming back from these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I think they ought to be our next greatest generation of business and community leaders. And the idea behind this bill is to give a microloan to a veteran to give a little leg up on getting that started. Now, we just had our latest, and Colonel Allness can speak better to this, but we just had our latest wave of Minnesota National Guardsmen come back, and I understand 30% of them are without jobs right now. And, you know, we're just looking, as veterans in the community, we're looking at all different ways to help veterans get jobs and get back into the community. And this is just one way, Mr. Chair, that we're looking at doing this. I think it's a wonderful idea to give a microloan to a veteran, get started in business. Now, in my law practice, I help a lot of veterans get started in businesses. And the number one issue is, and of course this isn't anybody starting a business, is they simply don't have enough money to get started. So this just gives a veteran to start a business, get a leg up doing that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. I don't know, was it Mr. Carlson from Deed, was it?
Nelson.
Carlson, Nelson, Johnson. Where I come from, it's all the same. Is there enough money then? It's a revolving loan fund, so there's enough money to handle this extra language.
We currently have $280,000. The maximum loans are $20,000 each, which means we can do 14 more loans. At the rate they've been coming in, I'd say yes, we do have capacity to work with startup businesses.
I think it's a great idea. Colonel Allness, you want to say anything or you just want to say hi?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, of course I want to say something. I think as you look at this, there's room in this modest program for some modest growth. And what this does is it allows us to address an issue that is we're facing every time units come back, and that's we got veterans who are looking for jobs after deployment. And a lot of these people have ideas that they'd like to do to start up a new business. And this addresses that need and helps put veterans to work.
Good idea. Different times than when that last great generation came back. You know, members, I remember a few years back, it must have been in about 2006 or so, our local newspaper did a recognition of family-owned businesses on the range that had been in business for 55 years. And basically, it was because all those GIs came back from World War II and they started businesses, and a lot of them were like Johnny Starkovich was the one beer distributor, and he distributed Schmidt, and Everett Bartoletti was a beer distributor, and he distributed Hams, and Johnny Carricus distributed, and we had all these companies where we made things in America, and then they got to open up a business using our goods made in America. I don't know what our next, they can sell sandwiches. Thank God they'll be made in America, because the toothpaste is killing us from China, so you can make the sandwiches here at least. The dog food is killing us, but what's the Don't Representative Reinert, any comments on this?
Don't eat the dog food, Mr. Chairman.
It's cheap. Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chair, if I can ask a couple questions.
Go ahead.
Representative Newton, I just want to make sure I just looked over the language. So our goal here is to take a program that currently is targeted at folks that are being deployed and expand it to recently returned veterans, and only for folks that have served after 9/11, correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Reinert, that's correct.
Okay. And then Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
Okay.
Nelson.
I was getting Scandinavian names mixed up after the chair took us down there. All right. Your opinion is there's room in, I mean, it certainly looks like there's room, but from an administrative standpoint, if 120 out of 400,000 is committed, there's room to allow some additional eligibility?
Yes.
Okay, great. And I just want to say to the gunny, I went to Navy Officer School and I still have nightmares about my gunny sergeant. So,
you can begin now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions? Sam Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nelson, how long did it take to get those six loans out there to people that want recipients?
The program began last October, I believe.
So several months.
Several months, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Mahoney. Did you have a question? All righty then. Thank you very much, and we will move this bill along with Representative probably Obermuller's and Commissioner Swiggums. We'll just move it along. We definitely all support it.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Thank you all very much. Farrell?
Mr. Chair.
Adjutant? Okay.
Where is it?
Where is it? Okay. Okay, Representative Obermueller then. Because Representative Reinert's bill is the only other one, and Representative Reinert is going to try to get here as soon as Representative Obermueller moves that House Law 2781 be recommended, passed, and held over for possible inclusion in our policy, omnibus policy bill. Yeah, omnibus policy bill. Representative Obermueller. And
thank
Commissioner.
You,
Commissioner's coming down.
Members, I apologize for stepping out there.
Oh, no,
as you might have noticed, that a few FFA members you wanted to meet with, I'm their adopted legislator, as it turns out. They were pleased to hear that I grew up on a little family dairy farm and knew their issues already. So.
Did you really?
I did. So don't tell anybody that. But I guess I just did.
Where did you grow up on a...
My parents' farm is in Glenwood City, Wisconsin, which is about 50 miles east of St. Paul. Still about 300 acres. Dad still hobby farms now. Doesn't dairy farm anymore. He's retired, but...
Because his son left and went to do not so honest work.
Mr. Chair, I did send, I don't have the calluses on my fingers that I had when I was a kid, but I did send my two teenage boys to the farm all summer long to help Grandpa on the farm, and they came back with considerable work ethic that they didn't have when they left. So
that
turned
is
out
very
okay.
Good to know. And why didn't you ever play this card before?
I've been saving it for the re-election campaign. So
well, you might have helped you pass a few bills around here. And yeah. Go ahead, Representative Obermueller and Commissioner, welcome, Mr. Joyce, and Commissioner, Mr. Speaker, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you for having us. And we do have one oral amendment, and something that didn't get translated. And we actually moved this amendment last time around, and it's on line 4.3 in the third column. That number that's 260 there, that dollar figure, should actually be 270. And it was, we actually made the motion in the last committee, and it passed, but for some reason didn't make it. So I'll make that motion, if I may, Mr. Chair.
You have 270 instead of 260?
It should be 270, not 260.
Okay. Representative Obermueller makes that. We'll just incorporate that in. Or we'll take it as incorporated. It's his bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then we also have an amendment. It's the A-10-2370 amendment. If I could move that amendment, please.
Representative Obermueller moves the A-10-2370 amendment. Do you want to talk about it before we vote on it?
Sure, I'm happy to explain it. It basically does two things. The first is it clarifies that if you're a plumber who's working for a water conditioning contractor, you don't have to have two licenses to do that, but that your scope of work as that is whatever the license scope would be for the water conditioning contractor. And the second piece is deletion of a subdivision that deals with plumber apprentices, which we used to allow do some scope of work with our water conditioning contractors, but we're taking that out given that we're given this, I take it because we're given this other authority under the section that's ahead of it. So essentially it's clarifying that you don't have to go through our licensing process twice to do this work, but the work that you're doing there has to be the water conditioning licensed work.
Okay, we have the 2370 amendment in front of us, and Ms. Novak, should we do the page 4, line 3, delete 260 and insert 270 in this too? Okay, everybody understand. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All those, I guess, did I incorporate that into the amendment, the other part of it, or do I need to? And we'll vote on my amendment, your amendment, and all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Now we have the amendment as amended, passed. Just a clarification for the committee and myself.
Could I?
Go ahead. Representative Eastland.
I'm reading the amendment here after we voted on it, but I guess is what I'm reading on the amendment. I'm not sure it lined up with what I heard you say. What it looks to me like the amendment says that if you are working for a water conditioner contractor, no matter what license you have, you're limited to water conditioner work. Is that what it does?
I'm going to let Mr. Joyke. I think I know the answer, but I'm going to let Mr.
Joyke. Mr. Joyke, welcome. Just Identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, Tom Joakim, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Labor and Industry. What this does is we have a number of license categories. You can be a master plumber, you can be a journeyman plumber, you can be a restricted master, a restricted journeyman. In all those categories, you have limits on what you can do for work. If you happen to be one of those categories and work for a water conditioning contractor, you're only able to do work that water conditioning contractor license allows. So what we're trying to clarify is such that a water conditioning contractor can't go out and contract to do plumbing work that they're not licensed to do. Even though they might have a master plumber working for them, they can only do work that their license allows them to do. That's what this intends to clarify.
Representative Eastland.
I mean, I don't know what the scope of work necessarily, where it starts and stops, but I mean, so that means if a water conditioning contractor was selling water softeners and putting them in, and he came to a place that required some additional piping that maybe didn't fit under the water conditioner's license, they couldn't do it if they had a plumber's license?
Mr. DeWitt.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, they could not do that. Another plumbing contractor could come in and do that work, but their license, their water conditioning license is very specific to installing water conditioning equipment, and that's all their license is. Now, they can get another license if they so choose after they get hours and experience, but that license is very limited to just installing water conditioning equipment and maintaining and servicing it.
Representative Mahoney to this point.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Joakim, most, correct me if I'm wrong, easily could be, aren't most plumbing contractors also water condition contractors also? I mean, it's pretty much a dual license, particularly once you leave the metro counties.
Mr. Joakim.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. One of the things we're changing in this bill is the plumbing industry was the only industry that was left that did not require or did not have a contractor's license. The master plumber had to obtain a bond to act as a contractor. We are changing this in our bill here to establish that the plumbing industry will also have the same criteria that that anybody can obtain the plumbing contractor license provided they hire a master plumber of record. So that anybody that's not licensed, if they want to start a plumbing business, could do that as long as they hire the master of record. As the category goes down, a master plumber and a plumbing contractor license can do any plumbing work, including water conditioning work. But a water conditioning license is limited to just the water conditioning license.
Mr. Chair, if I may then, I want to give a thumbnail sketch of where the bill is, and then I'm very fortunate to have the commissioner with us. I'd like to give him a chance to testify. And the bill, in essence, seeks to help make our license system at the Department of Labor and Industry as it relates to construction a lot more transparent and a lot more efficient. Essentially, what it does is it collects all of the different licensing provisions and rules and statutes that we have and puts them in one location so they're easy to find. And then it categorizes kind of the level of skill equally across the various trades, so that if you're a master plumber or you're a master electrician or you're a master at a different trade, essentially the fee that you're charged is the same across those different, that same skill level, so that we basically make the system, you know, a lot more fair and transparent. There are several trades that will pay a little more dollars in terms of how much their license fee, but there are some that pay, you know, I think even more that pay less in fees, and then there's some that pay a lot less in fees. And what the system did essentially was take all of the fee cost that was in the system and spread it down to kind of be across the board. So we don't have any new money coming in. We have the same money being spread out more equally. So I think it's a great policy, and I would love the chance to have the commissioner say a few words about it, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Before we do that, I just want to make sure then, are all the different boards and all the different trades and all the different governmental units and everybody that's mentioned in the bill on board with this bill and have approved the bill?
Mr. Chair, I've had this in two other committees of hearings. No one has complained to me about it at all. In fact, my understanding from talking with the folks at Dolly that everybody is on board.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, committee members. we held at least two meetings, if sometimes three or four, with the various industry groups talking about the bill, what this does, what we see as the benefits to them, and how it works, and haven't had anybody complain other than some of them will say, well, mine's going up $10, but I can understand this is making it fair for everybody, so they agreed to it.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members, at the Department of Labor and Industry, we have 108,000 approximate fees per year that we issue. Plumbers, electricians, contractors, high-pressure pipers, you name them, about 108,000. And we have fees that range all the way from $0 to $450, with no apparent rhyme or reason to what we're charging. Now, with this group, I understand the sensitivity of fees. Being here over the past few years, sometimes fees, taxes, there's a fee, a tax, whatever, you know, I understand the political nature of fees. So I'm here to assure you and give you some comfort that this is a truly responsible bill, responsible to our stakeholders in the state. Our fees, when you look at the fees that are charged, they are not respective of the time that it takes the Department of Labor and Industry, our people, to issue the fee, to do the inspections and the enforcement that you want us to do for your constituents. So what we've done over the past year is we initiated a process with a couple of people within our financial services, where I basically told them this: I would like the fees to be respective of the time it takes us to issue the fee. That could include the continuing education requirements that have to be checked. That could include the bonding. That could include the board that they may have in the case of plumbers or electricians. We want to be respectful of that, and we want to make sure that the total amount of fees that we raise will not increase. We're not out to raise revenue for the department. So we raised approximately $5.1 million now with fees on your constituents, the stakeholders of Minnesota. If and when you choose to see fit to pass this bill, we will raise the same $5.1 million. The only thing is there will be some change regarding who will pay. We will have approximately, as Mr. Hovermiller mentioned, and Representative, thank you for carrying the bill. Thank you very much. We'll have approximately 50% of our fee holders will see their fees decrease, actually go down. We will see about 37% see their fees increase, and about 13% will see their fees stay the same. But now there's going to be some order rather than chaos in regards to the amount of the fee, and very importantly for the department, our ability to use people from one unit to another in an efficient way in regards to the issuance of the fee or the inspection of the fee. We think it's respect of the time. It certainly adds greatly to our efficiency. As Mr. Joachim, the Assistant Commissioner, did mention, we have reached out to every stakeholder group over the past fall that we can imagine is there. We have heard nothing but positive responses from those stakeholders, your constituents, as most of them are understanding of what the cost and the reason for doing this. Some of these fees, by the way, have not been raised since 1991. Some of those will actually see decreases, and some of those will actually see some small increases. But at least there will be an order now respective of the time it takes us. So I would appreciate your consideration and certainly your sensitivity to the issue of fees.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, just to follow up on the point you were just making, if you can help me walk through that a little bit. So with this bill that Representative Overmuller is carrying for you, you hope to put some structure and rationale behind the fees, and as a result of that structure and rationale, some will increase. And Mr. Chair, if I can just throw a follow-up on there. Do you now have an internal structure behind fees? I know in my days on the city council, we had to tie a fee back to actual staff costs. I mean, we had to, by state law, justify a fee. So I want to know that our state agencies have to play by the same rules.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Reiner, exactly to what you're saying this bill will do. I think we do have even a state law that says our fees should be respective of the time, the effort, the what it takes the department to issue that fee and inspect it and do the enforcement. Mr. Reiner, these fees will now be respective of that. There will be order. It'll basically split the fees, as Representative Obermueller said, into four different categories, and then we'll add the costs of the exam. We'll add the cost of continuing education. If it happens to be one group happens to have a board, which it costs us money to do to staff, it will be respective of and shown in that fee.
And Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, will that then be a policy or structure in place that will continue forward? So as we look at these in ongoing years, you'll have a matrix to come back to and be able to justify either a fee decreasing, staying the same, or increasing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Reiner, yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner, just for the sake of the committee, who got hammered, and who got held harmless?
Okay. Do we have the
Mahoney got helped?
The pipers got help. Yeah. It's pipe fitters.
I think.
Tell us, just so we have an idea.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Obermueller has the breakout in a pie chart, and I thought it would have been here for all committee members, but committee members don't have that?
I'm not sure what we have.
We have a summary from House Research that gives us a baseline, a journeyman, master business, and entry level.
Mr. Chairman, to go to the question that's before us, Mr. Obermueller has before him the exact breakout by different license as to how many will be going up and how many will be going down. And, Mr. Obermueller, would you want to share that?
Obermueller, you can put that on the. Good. Thank you, Dylan.
Can we put it here? Does that work?
Nice job, Dylan, even with your broken foot, Dylan. She's not listening.
Quit picking on.
I know. Okay, now we see it.
As you can see with the new numbers, the 26% are unchanged, 39% see a decrease, 35% see an increase. You want to flip the page, Commissioner, please? Plumbing and water conditioning licensing, 80% see a decrease, 20% see an increase. In electrical license, 34% see a decrease, 66% see an increase.
Can we stop there for just a second?
Pull over the increase amount so we can see that.
Yeah, on that one.
Maximum increase.
Now, did we do something in the bill the other night on this particular license increasing, or what was that, that an amendment was offered by Representative Mahoney maybe or someone?
Yeah, there's a $5 fee
on the fourth going from 50 cents to 450, permits. And I believe it had to do with your electrical inspectors and the state versus the contract. You guys get all the state jobs in the cities, and then we get what's left over out there for the electrical contractors. So,
was it a surcharge?
Is that included in there or not?
No, that's not included in there.
So are the electrical folks, electrical things getting hit twice with this fee for the electrical? The electricians, I assume, or electrical businesses, and then they're going to get another 450 increase?
Mr. Chair, committee members, the 450 increase would be on permits that they purchase. Most.
Or are they all permits or just electrical inspectors?
Electrical, building, mechanical, plumbing.
Everything.
All permits would be increased in that category. And those are generally pushed down to the homeowner or the business person paying for the construction project.
And that is not, of course, in here because it wasn't at the time. But it will be a new increase. And Mr. Joachim, the revenue raised on that is what again?
Mr. Chair, approximately $1.2
million. Okay. And the Department of Labor and Industry supports that?
Mr. Chairman, we would rather you do what you did last year in your bill, Mr. Chairman, and that would be to relieve the Department of Labor and Industry and our stakeholders from a transfer of $1.515 million from our CCLB fees to the general fund. Mr. Chairman, to your credit and to the credit of your members here on your body, you did see fit to do that for us last year. Unfortunately, we did not succeed in the conference committee. So the best thing we could do would be to relieve us of that transfer of fees to the general fund. Short of being able to do that, now we all have our choices in life that go down a road. Short of being able to do that, we are in a very difficult position in our department being able to inspect and enforce as you expect us to do. So short of being able to rid us of the transfer to the general fund, this was a way that we had to suggest to backfill the dollars which are taking being taken but to support the general fund. Does that answer your question, Mr. Chairman?
Oh, it was fun watching your hands jittery up there on the screen as the pen was moving. And see that, Mr. Speaker? And
well,
we could see, you know, I couldn't see your eyes from this far away, but I saw your hands. Okay. Go ahead then, Representative Mahoney, did you have a question?
No, I was going to explain the permit versus the election.
Okay. Representative, do we want to keep going through the chart? Who's getting hammered?
Members, I'd be happy. We did have an initial chart that actually, with each individual license, shows the up or down. And unfortunately, because of the amendments, that chart that we had wasn't accurate. So that's why this chart, this PowerPoint is. But we actually had that. Remember, there was a spreadsheet we had in the initial committee. And so I'm happy to distribute that to members. But the long and the short of where we are is we're really putting these, we're tying these fees back to what it actually costs to do. And short of solving this $1.5 million transfer out, this is really going to mean that you're paying for what you're getting out of your licensing system. So it's really smart policy, and I'm looking forward to the chance to advocate for it on the floor.
And is there anything else in here that was controversial at all, or anybody that wants to talk for or against it? I see the chamber is here, and they're supporting it. Why don't I ever get treated like this when I carry a bill?
Mr. Chairman, if I could just to give members the comfort on this committee, because we are talking about fees and I understand the sensitivity to it. Members, your constituents, the stakeholders you have that are licensed by the department, at least their groups, if not them individually, at least their groups have all been spoken to many times, and the stakeholders are supportive of the change that is necessary to make these fees reflective of the costs. And again, thank you, Representative Mueller, for bringing this forward.
Okay. Any other questions on the bill? If not, Representative Eastland.
So are these new increased fees going to go someplace so that they won't be snatched into the general fund at some point in time?
I think, Representative Eastland, that currently the current law is that unless it's changed, and it wasn't changed in our bill, is that they're going to keep contributing out of these fees to the general fund deficit. And the new fee we increased the other day will hopefully help alleviate some pressures on the department. But, you know, the problem, and as an example, the reason we needed that amendment was that the other day for the bill was that a lot of the inspections aren't going on, let's say, for wiring. And the good contractors and the good, honest folks that you represent Eastland, that play by the rules, they keep paying for their fees and everything else. And the other ones, you know, they're not getting inspected. They just say, well, why in the heck should we even pay for this? They're not coming out anymore and inspecting us. And that was why we tried. With that, why we put that extra $450 bump on that. But unless we raise taxes fairly, we're going to raise fees unfairly. So you and I don't want to have the discussion here today. We want to get out of here. So the $1.5 million or whatever it was we took out, I think $1.5 million.
$1.515 million, Mr. Chairman.
Is going to keep going to the general fund to balance the budget. Representative Eastland, anything else?
Yeah, I just have one other question.
Go ahead.
I know for the residential contractor's license, I think it was last year, we increased the fee by $10 to pay for the electronic deal. is that going to die after 2 years like it was thought it was going to die, or is that just going to go on as an additional fee and stay there forever?
Mr. Joachim, do you want to take that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Eastland, are you speaking about the e-licensing fee?
Yes.
The e-licensing fee will be for 6 years, Mr. Eastland, not for two, and it is it's 10% of the fee with a minimum of five and a maximum of $50, maximum of $150, a minimum of five, maximum of $150. It's 10% of the fee. That is for a completely, and that is not included in these numbers right here. Although, Mr. Eastland, so you know, when we spoke to all our stakeholders, your constituents, we made them aware that that fee is forthcoming, that they will be seeing that for their e-licensing accessibility, for that efficiency, which we hopefully add to the lives of your citizens. But that is not part of this fee increase. That's not this fee redistribution. It's not that's an increase. It's separate from the restructuring.
Representative Eastland.
How many e-licensure, are you going to e-licensure for all your licenses? And my question would be, then, is are all the other licenses paying this e-licensing fee as well?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Eastland, I believe the e-licensing fee is on all departments, all agencies, all licenses in the state that are business-orientated licenses. So it is in the Department of Human Services for daycare providers, child care providers. It's in our department for if you receive your plumber's license. And it's in health department for a license of, a nursing facility. So I think it's within the total was $36 million, if I remember correctly, for the electronic licensing program project. And again, that is for 6 years.
And it will, Representative Eastland, make the whole state as efficient as the Board of Cosmetology's e-licensing and
grading. And Mr. Chairman, for the comfort of the members, it has nothing to do with Representative Obermiller's bill. It's nothing
right.
to do with
we
bills
know that.
Before you right now.
Right. Okay. Further questions? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to answer a couple of Representative Eastland's questions. I think it was 8, it might be 10 years ago, I heard a bill to put a $5 charge on to high-pressure licensing, and this bill, that was supposed to go on for 2 years, and this is the bill that takes it off, finally. And every year, we continue to have budget deficits. I think, from memory, I can remember the $9 million, the $5 million, the $2 million, and I'm starting to lose after the third or fourth year, or third or fourth dollar figure that we've taken basically from labor and industry. That was for all these inspections and everything else backfill into the general fund. I'm not trying to start a fight here, but that's what we've been doing for 10 years now, 8 years now, pulling money out of labor and industry to backfill into the general fund.
And it's been happening everywhere, all over.
Yep.
Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this bill. I think we need to be on the state level as wise as we are on the county and city level. On the county and city level, fees are reviewed, I mean, if they're efficient, every year and voted on every year. And they determine at what portion should the government be paying for and what portion should the user of the service be paid for. So I think this is very wise to be doing this, and a fee shouldn't be raised because there's a bucket that doesn't have enough money in it. Fee should be raised by the service that is rendered by the government. Thank you.
Okay. No further questions, and we'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion, and thank you very much, Commissioner. Hossa, give me a high five.
Mr. Chairman, did you say for possible inclusion into another bill?
Yes.
You didn't want this one to go by itself, Mr. Chairman?
No, we're holding on. You know how it works. Thank you.
Representative
Gunther moves House File 3324 since Representative where's Mahoney? Oh, Representative Gunther 3324. Did anybody want to talk against this bill in the audience? I didn't ask, and nobody asked for it. Okay. Thank you. Representative Gunther. Go ahead. I know what it's like to be a second author and not and have to carry a bill.
Did you move the bill, Mr. Chairman?
Well, Representative Gunther moves that House
I move House File 3324 for possible inclusion.
There you go.
In the chairman's bill.
There you go.
And members, this is a bill that I think is a very good bill. This bill expands the project's eligibility to receive funding through the Minnesota Investment Fund projects that support the development of micro enterprises are now eligible. And with that, Mark Loftus would love to tell you all about it.
But Bob Isaacson will.
Bob Isaacson.
Yes. Loftus is hiding up in the audience.
That's all right.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Bob Isaacson. I'm Director of the Business Finance Office in the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The Minnesota Investment Fund is a fund that Deed uses to provide grants to local government, which then loans money to businesses to help them with their business operations, typically expansion. The fund is funded through state appropriations, a revolving loan element, as well as federal funds through a set-aside from the Community Development Block Grant that comes into the state each year. Within this Community Development Block Grant guidelines, there is provisions to allow Deed to provide funds to microenterprises to help them with technical assistance, that is, help them with business planning, help them with marketing, small business development type services. We want to get authority, this bill will give authority to us to provide those funds to local government to partner with different types of counseling providers to help microenterprises with their small business operations. This is particularly important at this time in the economy because small businesses are growing so rapidly. Large businesses, by and large, are stagnant or cutting jobs, so we want to be able to provide a little more fuel to small businesses throughout the state through additional resources of counseling and other types of business assistance services.
So, Mr. Isaacson, so you'll contract this out or you'll do this in-house?
We will do an RFP, and eligible or interested parties will submit proposals to us. We're looking at spending about $500,000 and probably doing 5 grants to local governments who will then contract with business counseling providers.
And just out of curiosity, you don't have the expertise in-house to not give away 500 grand and go out and send people out to small businesses or communities that may want to
Mr. Chair, members,
expand a business and give the business person advice?
Absolutely. We have the expertise in-house, but given these are federal dollars, we have some guidelines we need to follow in terms of administering those dollars, and they need to be awarded to local governments and provide the services at the local government level. I would expect some providers of these services, the actual recipients of final dollars, might be services that are administered through Deed. For example, small business development centers may choose to partner with local governments to provide some of these services as an example of using these federal dollars in a creative way.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Mahoney would like to move the A4 amendment to this. At least his name is on the amendment.
Yes. I was going to get to that. I was just curious about the... So, we're just expanding the program. You've got the money. The money is a general fund appropriation and other sources. It's community development, block grants.
Mr. Chair, we're just planning on using the community development block grant dollars for these services.
And it's an administrative holding, because don't those just pass through to small projects, local government projects, places that don't have the federal direct appropriation for CDBG grants?
Mr. Chair, members, exactly. If they're not entitlement area, the dollars come to us, and we distribute them to non-entitlement areas throughout the state.
These are the administrative dollars you're allowed to keep in the federal formula that you're just using differently?
We receive the set-aside from the Community Development Bank grant dollars. We can use some portion of that for administrative fees, administer the program, but these are just dollars that normally would go out to business expansion possibilities, but instead we're going to be diverting them to small business counseling and assistance.
So those nice projects that I see in St. Louis County is an urban county, so we don't go through you. We have a direct appropriation from the federal government, but the program's basically the same. And a business, now that the county gets to give them an outright grant, you'll instead capture that could have gone to you've got a number of little communities in your district. and you'll take some of it, and you'll hire a consultant that'll probably take a bunch of the money to go out and tell somebody how they should apply for some other funds. That's
well, kind of what's going on. Mr. Chair, members, we've had a challenge the last couple of years in distributing all of our federal dollars to businesses because there are some important criteria that we need to follow and businesses need to follow when they receive federal community development block grant monies. Because of that, we've had a little bit of excess money that we've had to use for other purposes besides business assistance, and therefore we want to try to expand the use of it to deliver more services to businesses in different creative, innovative ways that we haven't been doing.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but don't CDBG dollars also, aren't they eligible, a community itself eligible, so say you got a grant to put in sewer and water to somebody and you can't give all the money away? I'll bet you I could.
Wait, Mr. Chair, members, the dollars that come into the state are used as awards for infrastructure. Part of that is also set aside for economic development activities, business assistance, for example, and those are the dollars that we're referring to now. If we can't use all those dollars, they're used put back in the infrastructure type demands if we have enough demand and sufficient to use for those types of dollars.
Okay. Representative Mahoney, we'll move your amendment first, then Representative Anderson. Do you have a question on the amendment or on the bill?
On the amendment.
Representative Mahoney moves the amendment A4, and Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, I'm just looking at the portion that's on page 4, and it's establishing a 10-member executive committee. Can't the Workforce Development Council already do something like that, where they set aside a group from the council to kind of work on it and then come back to the overall council overall? Can you give me a little idea of what the reason was by putting this language in?
Representative Mahoney, just a second. Representative Breinert's here. Representative Breinert, Gunther's killing your bill. You better sit down.
Yeah.
You just gave a nick and wrist.
Mr. Chair, I just came from the funeral of a grand Irish lady, and bagpipes give you a perspective on life, so I'm not too worried about this.
Okay. All right. I'm just teasing you. He's doing a good job so far. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson. Governor's Workforce Council, Workforce Development Council does do something similar to this. This particular committee would be an executive committee within that group. Part of their charge is to answer or to develop programs that will address the legislative auditor's report, the gaps that they have, the lack of coordination that they talked about, and puts the director of the Governor's Workforce Development Council in charge rather than the Commissioner of Deed. So in some respects, they do similar things. They have work groups, and they come back to the full group and report their work group findings to the full 31-member council. This is giving the chair of the Governor's Workforce Development Council authority to grab 10 people off out of those 31 and come back with recommendations. Because frankly, as much as I've spent time trying to figure out workforce, I don't have the answers. And we need answers to that workforce.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're not going to have the person that's in charge of the department actually involved in the process of taking the legislative auditor's report and making those changes? That seems puzzling to me.
Representative.
I'm trying to be...
It seems what to you, Representative?
Puzzling.
I thought you said pleasant. I didn't agree with
it. I had you.
There's, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, there's no reason that the commissioner couldn't be included on this choice of these 10 people. But I'm looking for answers that have less of a partisan bent, and the commissioner of Deed said that this is a very nonpartisan group that is made up in this Governor's Workforce Council, Workforce Development Council. So the commissioner being a political appointee, I'm trying to, I've changed from 12 years ago when Mr. Representative Gunther and I used to spend time at these tables, and I'm actually trying to find workable solutions that don't have a basis in partisan politics.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, what I see it and how I view it as is it is being very political, and that you're doing just the opposite of what you're hoping to achieve. But that aside, Representative Mahoney, I also wanted to ask you a question about on page 5. You've got in there allocating funds of $350,000 per year for the workforce. Give me a little idea. What are you hoping to do here?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm trying to establish what their base budget is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. So this is for the administrative costs for this executive committee then, or just for the Workforce Development Council in general?
For the Governor's Workforce Development Council in general.
Okay, great. Thank you.
We have the Mahoney Amendment, then the 8-4 Amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Representative Breyer, before we move on, Mr. Isaacson, just give us an idea of how much money you withhold for of that CDBG money that could go for infrastructure for this that you're considering, and then what you're going to use for this program. You mentioned the dollar amount, but how much do you hold of that CDBG money currently for administrative purposes?
Mr. Chair, members, we receive somewhere in the order of 35, so I'm looking at Mr. Loftus, who provides some information on the overall CDBG allotment. The program, the business set aside, economic development set aside, is about $3 million. It will be for the next fiscal year, of which we're targeting about $500,000 for this particular business counseling activity.
So you get $35 million of CDBG money, Mr. Loftus. You get $35 million to CDB.
I'm sorry, Mr. Loftus just corrected me.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the it changes each year, but it's been in the range of $18 to $20 million a year in total. Yeah. In federal block grant that we allocate around, I think it's 15%, which comes out to whatever the math is, $3 to $3.5 million.
So you get $18 to $20 million, and then you keep 15% just to pass out the money. And you're going to use some of it to,
Mr. Chairman, the 15% of the set aside, which we call the economic development set aside, has been historically used for the grants to cities to make loans to businesses. That's been our business, our federal business loan source. And as Mr. Isaacson said, we've had difficulty because of the parameters of the federal program, the federal money that govern it. Providing that to assistance to companies in those non-entitlement areas. So we came up with the idea of trying to fill a need and serving small businesses by opening up the eligibility. So we take a portion of that 15% and allocate it for these specific services. I can't tell you offhand what our administrative number is. It's probably overall in your portion of business finance. It's probably in the range of $200,000 to $250,000 a year that we allocate for the staff of Bob's office who administer federal projects. But we can get you that exact number. I just don't have it in my head.
Members, wouldn't it be nice if on all the different committees at the Capitol we could get a handle on the real money that we spend coming from the feds and us and the fees and everything else? It would be.
Probably cost us too much.
So just so I understand it, so we have $18 to $20 million a year coming in on that, what I would call a rural CDBG program administered by our Department of Employment and Economic Development. You capture 15% up to, because that's what the feds let you do on the formula, and so that is 2.4 to $3 million a year, and the rest you give out to the communities and out of the 2.4 to 3 million, you keep what percent for administrative? You said about 10?
Mr. Chairman, I think so.
About 10%. Yeah. So you get 240,000 to 300,000 a year for administrative purposes, and then the rest of it, you have been trying to, I mean, is there anything that prohibits you from saying Chatfield needs to do the one where you have the music thing in there, and you give them a grant there, and you don't worry about the business? I mean, it'd be a good economic development for the city. Is there anything that prohibits you from doing that?
Mr. Chairman, in the program's guidelines, we have to use it for a couple of things. One is job creation, and there's a connection of those dollars to a job creation by a private business. There's also limitations, and this is part of the problem for us, is that the federal funds have to be used for what's described as low to moderate income benefit, or LMI, as their federal acronym goes. And because of that, and it sounds strange, but the funds cannot be used for businesses that pay too well, which I know sounds odd, but if we had $20 an hour jobs, we couldn't use our federal funds. We couldn't even do it at $16 an hour. So we have to, there's a narrow window of the types of companies and the types of businesses that we can assist with it. And so we are tightly monitored by the federal government and our use of the federal block grant funds, and it has to be that low to moderate income job creation benefit.
Representative Welty, what is the archivist that the Chatfield Music and the janitor get? You know, see, that's what I don't understand. I mean, you know, there's probably a lot of worthwhile projects you could do it rather than hire a consultant to tell Representative Downey how to start his new business, when Representative Downey is probably a pretty good entrepreneur and certainly a very good capitalist. And as a compliment, I meant that as a compliment, Representative Downey. And, you know, maybe it would be more worthwhile to give him a grant to start the business rather than to hire a consultant to tell them how to start the business. But
Mr. Chairman, and
we'll look at the bill, and I don't know if anybody else does. Well, go ahead, Mr. Isaacson.
Mr. Chair, members, I think it's important to note that this gives us authority. Doesn't necessarily mean that we'll be doing it annually. We'll be trying to take a look at the demand for the program each year annually and determine whether this is a use that we want to do that year. Otherwise, the dollars would be used for...
Representative Reiner, do you want to...
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that you've just spoken to the Minnesota Investment Fund. Is that correct? Which is a portion of the bill, but you haven't spoken to the construction mitigation grants? Because we have Mike Myrie here.
Yeah, we're just on the first part.
So. Okay. So, are you ready to move to the second part?
Go ahead.
Okay. So, the second part of the bill addresses construction mitigation grants, and this program allocated, this was in our last year in the finance bill for higher ed and workforce development, $100,000 to be awarded up to 5 projects. And the mitigation efforts focus on signage, marketing, and technical assistance to help businesses survive through and plan beyond construction. This legislation proposes removing the language up to 5 projects, since the top 5 projects that applied only total about $40,000. So removing the restriction would allow DEED to fund up to 13 projects, since the average project request is under $100,000. And I'll introduce Mike Myrie from the Office of Enterprise and Small Business to speak a little bit more about the 13 projects that might be funded.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Construction Mitigation Grant Program is actually a pilot program created by the Department of Transportation in the 2008 legislative session. Representative is correct in that $100,000 was appropriated to this. We put out an RFP, and we got a much greater response to that RFP than we expected. We actually received 19 proposals from 19 different communities, both rural and urban. And the legislative language says that the monies must be appropriated proportionally between the metro and rural communities. And we looked at what the requests were for. And what we came to a conclusion is that we could maximize the $100,000 and actually increase our impact on businesses that are affected by construction projects from about 100 to about 240 if we were able to award up to 13. 13 of the 19 were determined to be fundable and viable projects and meet the purpose of what these funds are supposed to be used for. So we're asking to remove that threshold to allow us to do 13 projects.
And I remember, if I remember, was this Representative Camp, Championsville?
Yes. Correct.
Because everything got torn up and people couldn't get the businesses and the signs.
Yeah.
So I think it's a pretty good use of it. Yeah. Go ahead, Ms.
And we do have the concurrence of both the authors in the Senate and in the House who had issued a letter to our commissioner agreeing to the lifting of the five maximum.
Okay. Any questions on that part of it? Well, if not, then... we have the bill as amended, and we'll just hold it over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Reinert, Representative Gunther.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to thank Representative Gunther for stepping in for me.
Great job. Okay, members, anything else? Anybody? If not, thank you so much. We're going to have a few bills left over. Representative Poppy's bill on Thursday, and I think I have a bill, and somebody else has one, and Representative Norton has a bill. And with that, members, meeting adjourned.